Imagine doing something kind for someone, a random act of kindness. Let's say you run to the store for a family member at night because they need something on the refrigerator, or you run for baby formula, or let's say diapers, because it's late at night and you don't want to send your family member, your cousin, your aunt, or your friend out. So you run to the store and you just happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Or you just happen to be at the wrong place, but not at the wrong time, just at the wrong place. Imagine being accused for something that you did not commit, a crime, a murder that you didn't commit. Falsely accused, spending half your life that you've walked this earth, spending more than half your life than you walked this earth, behind bars. And not giving up. Believing that one day, holding on that one day you'll be free. Well, Sean K. Ellis doesn't have to imagine that because he's actually lived through it. And he's now an advocate for the criminal justice reform. We had Sean on, and typical Bro-Rance fashion, we had several technical difficulties. And I don't mention that just to, like, brag about our issues, but I just wanted to paint the picture of the kind of person Mr. Ellis is. We had him with our issues for about 20 plus minutes, and he never showed any angst. He never showed he was irritated or upset or anything. He actually was just understanding. He was very understanding. He was kind. He actually made us feel like crap for probably being more upset. And I only say that just to show you that there is a lesson to be learned from Sean K. Ellis if you listen and watch, that we all can learn. The segments are marked 21 years, 7 months, and 29 days. They are the time frame that he spent behind bars. I hope you enjoy the show.
Mr. Ellis.
Peace.
Hey, listen, it's so good to hear your voice.
Tell me about it, man.
Hey, we sorry about the technical difficulties. You know what?
That happens, man. We're in age of COVID.
Thank you for your patience. We truly appreciate you.
Definitely.
Absolutely, bro. I appreciate you all.
Raymond had one job to do, was plug the laptop in. That was all Raymond's fault.
Sorry.
Wow. One job. No, I was kidding. That was all me, man. I was so wrapped up in trying to get everything. I knew the one thing I forgot until I was like, what did I forget? And then your last question, everything just went
bam.
Bam. So today we have Sean Ellis, and Sean Ellis is from Trial 4. Sean, would you do us a favor and introduce yourself to the people that may have not watched the documentary and let them know who you are?
They better watch it, though.
Absolutely. Definitely watch Trial 4. It's airing on Netflix. My name is Sean K. Ellis. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I spent 22 years incarcerated for the murder of a Boston police detective, which is a crime that I did not commit. I was released from prison in 2015. The Commonwealth dropped the murder and robbery charges in 2018. In December of last year, my attorneys and I filed a motion to grant a new trial on their last remaining charges, which is possession. And once again, check out Trial 4 on Netflix if you haven't seen it.
I'd just like to commend you. you know, the takeaway from watching that series was, and I'm pretty sure you've experienced a variety of things since your ordeal, but the takeaway from it was your poise, okay? In watching it, I felt angry, I felt frustrated, and it seemed like every situation in which you, whether you were speaking to the attorney or friends or just the Netflix crew, your demeanor and your poise, it almost seemed at a place of peace. And I have to commend you for that, because I don't know if I'm built to after experiencing something like that, to maintain, you know, that level of poise, to maintain that level of insight, to still come out and be so open and willing to share and willing to talk to people. So, you know, definitely, man, it was really impressive. I think you're an amazing individual. And again, like, you know, like Red said, thank you so much for meeting with us. This is absolutely a pleasure. Thank you.
So, Mr. Ellis, piggybacking off of what Jeff just said about your patience, I was reminded by that when you asked for that lawyer. Her name is I couldn't get it right. Is it Panaccio?
Rosemary Scarpiccio.
Scarpiccio, yes,
Scarpiccio. Put a respect on that name.
Yeah, right. Rosemary. No doubt.
Yeah. You know, she was like you said. She was right to the point. She's like a bulldog. Like she was rough and tough, and she wasn't. She had no fear. But what I love about it is when she said that when she heard your story and you wrote to her, and piggybacking off of what Jeff said, she said she didn't have time for you, and you said, "I'll wait."
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, like it was just like, no, I needed, you know, I would have been like, I need you to help me right now. But you said, I'll wait. It was amazing that you said that. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's my reality is what you just said. Like, I needed a lawyer right in that moment, but there was something inside of me that knew that she was the one that I needed. So it's like the idea of me not waiting didn't exist. It's like, I, you know, that's what I want. Then I got to wait for it.
Right.
I was going to ask you one of the questions, because I know your motto now is, which is beautiful, wounded but not broken. Where did that phrase come from and originate from, and who is the message for?
So, in terms of like origination, like I'm not too sure about that. But where it came from, in my mind, it's like one night, I was coming up on my anniversary, for being home. No, as a matter of fact, I think it was the anniversary for when the case got dismissed, when the Commonwealth threw the case out.
Okay.
And I was talking to my fiance at the time, and she asked me like, how is it that I was feeling in that moment at that time? And I just shared that, you know, I was wounded, you know, I was wounded by all that I went through, but that I wasn't broken by it. She happened to, you know, get a t-shirt made celebrating my anniversary. Wow. And it was on a t-shirt.
Wow. No, that's beautiful, because it's universal. I mean, it can apply to anyone. That's why I asked you, like, who is it meant for? It's just not for you. It's for anyone that has gone through some, well, either wrongful conviction or anything, been wrong, period, or either by an abusive relationship.
Absolutely.
So it's very, absolutely. I love the message.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's, and that's the beauty in that. It's like, it isn't just for people who have been wrongfully convicted. It's for young children who are fatherless or who are motherless.
Gotcha.
Or who's being raised by a single parent that has come up through the system or through a hardship. It's for those who have been in the department of children and families or DSS, and it's for the battered women and the battered men.
Wow.
You know, it's for homicide survivors, rape survivors. Like, yeah. It's for those who have, like, you know, gone through something that is intended on breaking who they are as a person, that is intent on breaking their spirit. Yeah. But they fight through and persevere through and come out of it not broken. That, like, that's who that's for. That's who's all represented in that, because it's that type of spirit that is the kindred spirit that runs through us all and connects us all.
Absolutely. I was going to say, yeah, it definitely connects us all and brings us together. So, yeah, it's like having a brethren or a society or community that has been hurt by the world and or, you know, by circumstances. But yet you're not alone. So, I mean, it speaks volumes. Like I said, it defines your situation to a T, and I love it. You know, I was wounded, but not broken by my mom, but that's a different story.
Right.
I mean, my mom's great. She just wants to whoop me. She's great. She just used to beat the hell out of me. She actually listened. She actually watched your thing, because I told her, I was like, look, I have this guy, he's coming on our show. You got to watch it. I wanted to get... It was so much pressure, you know. I we reached out to you, but it was so much pressure because I wanted you. You were coming on the show, and I was like, I want this to be right. I want to make sure we do him right, as far as, you know, how the way we present ourselves. So I was like, man, I need questions, whatever. So she like binge watched it because her Netflix was acting up. Netflix, you know, you got to tell people to unplug their Fire Stick and put it back in. But anyway, it was acting up. It was not playing your thing. And she was like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, they're doing something. They're not playing the Trial 4. Everything else is playing. I said, Mom, I understand. She was like, no. That Derek Chauvin trial is going on right now. So it's got something to do with it. I was like, Mom, unplug it, put it back in. So it works. She stayed up all night watching it. And she was like, tell that boy. I was mad, I was angry, I was crying, and I was happy, but I was like, oh, I can kill those men. But she was just saying, tell him I'm praying for him, and I'm happy for him, and I pray to God that he gets all the, you know, it can't make up for anything, but all the money in the world that basically bankrupts that city.
It's a range of emotions.
Yeah.
Mr. Ellis, have you watched the documentary lately? Or better yet, let me swing that back. Like, what were your thoughts at the completed product?
It's a accurate representation.
Okay.
Who knows?
I was angry.
Yeah.
I was so angry for you. I just, you know, because you're raised with the belief that if you are honest and upfront, and especially if you've got nothing to hide, you should be good, right? Yeah. Like that's like a basic understanding, and to see how that whole situation just went so left, and then when you hear the things going on behind the scenes that help to push it in that direction, that just adds to the frustration level. But you know what? Even in that story, there were a lot of things that I found just really interesting. And I think, and it's to borrow a term that I think you use, like there seemed to be divine intervention, you know, in at several points within your story, one of which is Godma. I believe is that what, like, can you tell us about that situation and just, like, you know, the dynamic and the relationship you have with her?
So I was incarcerated at what was at the time the maximum security prison of the state, and you know, she just happened to you know, write me a letter and just asked, you know, if I remembered her and her family and who they were. And of course I remembered them, because that was, you know, a particular period of time in my life. And so you know, she ended up coming to visit me. Her and her son, who, you know, coming up was like a best friend, and she just took an interest. And you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, that was definitely love there.
I tell you this right here. What was crazy to me was when you had the court case to get a new trial, and the judge has said, based on the facts, that you know, she thought you deserved a new trial, but she said, against her better wishes or something like that, she says, you know, I know there were honorable and true and honest cops. I am still trying to figure out who she was talking about. Mm. When she said there were cops who were actually honest and good cops. I was watching the documentary. I'm looking at every episode. I'm like, who's she talking about? Who were the honest cops? I didn't see any of them because they were all seemed dirty.
Well, that's her just trying to save good face, saying that they're honest cops regardless. You know what I mean? Not just trying to say we got a couple of bad apples. So it was her saying that to protect the judicial system.
Right. Well,
if that makes sense. That's what I got from it.
Yeah, so, you know, when you deal with the local politics of it all, it's. I don't think there's any judge in the world that would want to put shame on an entire police department. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what she was attempting to represent, and expressing that.
Yep.
However, there was a individual, Patrick Rose, that was on the police department around the time of all of this. And his name doesn't ring a bell in regards to my case itself, but what we're speaking about is the culture that existed within the Boston Police Department and the corruption that was allowed to exist. But this individual, Patrick Rose, you know, locally it came out that he was recently, he's alleged to have committed sexual assaults on some children, and that's like that's all local news. But it was a police officer who rose in the ranks of the police union, and so when you hear people speaking about the culture of the police at that time, this is the type of stuff that we're talking about. Trial 4 just represented some of what the Boston Police of that time was, you know, doing.
I mean, you were there. You live in the neighborhood. You came up. You were you experienced the not so good side of that interaction. Do you think that has changed your trust in the system or trust in people overall?
Absolutely. Is definitely changed my trust in the system. And like, mind you, like it wasn't a thing where you know, I just went to the police station. You know, they was asking me questions about the homicide of my two cousins. And it was during that they basically just pounced on me with the allegations of killing Detective Mulligan. And so it wasn't like, well, let me just go and tell them that I was at what. It wasn't that sort of thing. But it's, you know, and as much as I was there and they pounced, it's like, yeah, I was there buying diapers. Like, what's the problem? Right. That's not a crime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But getting to your question, what was it?
No, I think you asked. I was kind of just curious about, like, just your trust. You know, like, does I have to believe something like that? Just, it leaves a mark, right? And as much as you want to, you know, be the person you were after something like that, I have to believe maybe it impacts your trust level, whether it's with everyday people, but especially with law enforcement. So I was just wondering about that.
It's both. Mm. It's the system as a whole, but then it's everyday people as well.
Okay. Mm.
Mr. Ellis, when you was in prison, what was your rock? What kept you sane when you knew day in and day out you're innocent? You're not supposed to be here. Like, what kept you going?
What kept me going is the fact that I was innocent and I had loved ones that I was fighting to get back home to. You know, one of my biggest fears was, you know, my mother dying while I was incarcerated. And yeah. So, you know, me being innocent, you know, the reality that if I didn't get out of there, that my mother was going to die while I was in there. You know, just that, like that. And then throughout this process, like, you know, I developed a relationship, you know, with God.
Okay.
And I'm not one of those people who are shameful to acknowledge to God.
Okay.
And so I studied things as far as Christianity, Jehovah Witness, like Buddhism. I dealt with the Nation of Gods and Earth. I dealt with the Nation of Islam. Just, you know, it's all in attempts to establish that, you know, oneness, you know, to come into a realization. And so yeah. That was very monumental in helping me to get through the process.
Mm. Do you go back to prison and to help other people, as far as, do you have like a program where you actually go back and talk to inmates?
Nah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He was like, hell no.
I understand.
I was like, yo, bro. He's like, I've been, he's like, I was already there. He's like, I was already there helping them out. Yeah.
I get calls from people that I established, you know, relationships in there mm-hmm. with.
Yeah.
You know, some of whom I believe are innocent, but in terms of me going back in there,
I don't blame you, not one
at
bit.
All. Zero judgment here, brother.
I was going to say, how many people that you've come across in prison that had a similar story to you? Are there? What's the percentage you would say?
Percentage wise. I would have to create that like skill.
Okay.
But you know, there's one is too many.
Mm. Agreed.
Exactly.
You know, I was too many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the fact that I'm not the only one, and the fact that, you know, while I was in there, I got my paralegal certificate and I had people come to me to ask me for help, on a legal matter and by reading their cases, like, that's how and why I can take the position where, you know, I can honestly say that I'm not the only one. Like, I've seen other people's cases.
Gotcha.
With things like this have happened.
Well, maybe how?
Maybe not to the scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is, police officers in the city
mm-hmm.
That existed at that time that is well known they were dirty.
Mm, right.
Gotcha. And it's well known that they was lying under oath and planting evidence and things. And so, you know, locally we're striving to call for an investigation into the police department, particularly of that time.
Wow.
I was going to say, because you said you got your paralegal license, right? And while incarcerated, as far as certificate, as far as reform, what would you say to the reform programs in there? Were they helpful, or were there barely any prison reform? After that face, I guess not.
You just shut him down right there.
I guess not. No, but I want to hear the people that don't know. I want people to know that when you go to prison, they're like, I want people to know that don't know that have this misconception about prison. Like, oh, you go to prison, you're going to come up reform. Like, you get the help they need. I just want people that don't know whether there is help or there's no help.
No, like, it's about a couple of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing of that couple is that if you want to work on you, you want to work on you.
Gotcha.
And whether it's you're reading self-help books, whether it's, you know, you're reading religious books, whether it's you studying whatever, like, you got to work on you.
Gotcha.
That's first and foremost, right? But then outside of that, what you get from the prison itself in terms of in terms of rehabilitation, mm-hmm. Is nothing.
Yeah,
you know, they have programs there, but the programs is really all about getting the money, not really about helping the people.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now I know, like, state by state is different. Like reparations, or you get money, you can go to court to get money from people who were wrongfully convicted. It's different state by state. What was the an amount you got from the state you're from?
You asking me about my finances, man?
No, I'm not personal, but
I don't know. But he's a narc. Don't answer.
Hold on. Give him the
yo, he's a narc. He's a narc.
Hold on.
Yo,
bear with me.
Hold on. Hold on.
This goes to what Reggie was saying. As far
no,
as
no, hold on, hold on.
Take a seat.
This dude is wired, bro. That ain't my mic.
But see, my question kind of goes to with Reggie as far as, you know, reform, as far as is that something you would want to work on, as far as like other people who go to prison who are innocent needs to be changed, as far as, you know, when they come out to nothing, they don't have nothing. You went in for 20, you know, 20 some years, they had nothing when they come out because they were locked up. So
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Right. And, you know, when I came home, I came home to absolutely nothing.
Right.
But I was still fighting my case when I came home. Mm-hmm. And when I say I came home to absolutely nothing, yeah, you know, there was people around me that helped to provide and make sure that I was straight. But in terms of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts,
yeah,
you know, here it's the Commonwealth. In other places, it's the state. But here I came home to absolutely nothing. No housing, no money, no job, no nothing.
Man.
All right. So but I also came home still fighting this case.
Yeah. Yeah.
I came home on a $50,000 bill. You know what I mean? So yeah. So, you know, I wanna lift up, you know, the people that helped me down during that process,
right,
until I was able to make the transition and learn how to do a resume and apply for a job and go through that process. Mm. You get what I mean? But so that was one of the things that you touched on, is the reentry phase, mm-hmm. Particularly of the exoneree.
Yeah.
Right. But then two, you're talking about the local compensation law, and as it stands right now, I'm still fighting this case. Yep. In December, my attorneys and I filed a motion for a new trial on a firearm charges. And just a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, our current district attorney, Rachel Rollins, assented to our motion, meaning she agreed that justice was not done in the case. And so right now we're waiting to go in front of the judge and see if he's going to grant
a new trial or dismiss the charges. Is it, you can do either one, right?
Yeah. So what's in front of him now is a motion for a new trial.
Okay.
The district attorney has said that once he grants that motion for new trial, that she is not going forward on a case, that she's dismissing everything in the case, which is the firearms.
Mm, right.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, Mr. Ellis, you know, kind of circling back on that, can you walk us through, right? You've been released, you've got your freedom, but you've got this trial pending, kind of like looming over you, right? Like, can you walk us through like that feeling and kind of where you were at that time? Because I know it's got to be a mixed bag, right? Like, you're happy to finally be out and be back with your loved ones, but then you still got this thing that just never seems to go away, even though they've got all the proof in the world that there's wrongdoing, right? So like where were you at, you know, during that process? Like, well, you speak to like your mental, emotional place, you know?
So my conditions of confinement changed. You know what I mean? In terms of I wasn't, you know, under
confinement,
the harsh conditions that I once was.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. But as far as mentally and psychologically, I was, as I remain, in the fight for my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so one of the things that reminded me, and prevented me from being complacent was I had a GPS on my ankle.
Gotcha.
So I seen that thing. I felt that thing every day, all day. Okay. So that was the connection as far as physically between me, the physical part of my fight.
Okay.
Gotcha.
It's wow. Like Jay-Z says, you know, you're in prison minus the bars, right? So, like, even right. though your sleeping arrangement has changed, it's like you still feel that pressure. You still got that thumb on you, you know? So I hear that.
How was it coming back? I noticed that one of the questions we had, but how is it coming back from it must have been like a time capsule or coming to the future, being 20 years in there and coming out and seeing the world completely different than what you remember? How did that feel to just re-enter this world, this modern day age, as far as from when you left it as a young teenager?
How did it feel?
Yeah, how did it feel? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'll say this to that I've been home going on 6 years, right?
Yeah.
And initially, when I first came home, the benefit of learning was intertwined with my feelings of happiness with being home. So, like, I'm trying new things and so on and so forth. Obviously, cross over to ISO type of technology.
Okay.
Right. And to me, the interface is 100% completely different. Mm-hmm. And so as we speak right now, I'm learning something completely new. In the same way that I was learning things completely new when I came home, and right now I'm all screwed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I say that, in a way where it's I'm still trying to learn how to use technology. Period.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
me too.
And so it's whereas. It isn't just a matter of crossing over from somebody that's already been out here with technology. Like, I'm behind the eight ball two or three times over with the crossover.
I believe you. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's intense.
But is it different now? Cause you're entering a society where, okay, so I don't know how it was in prison, as far as if there were cliques, if people were together, or it was just basically isolation as far as, now you're in a society where people are on their phones all the time. There's no connection. So, you know what I mean? Was there more of a connection before you coming back into the society that you see that there's a difference from when you left as far as people connecting with one another on a daily basis, face to face? Now everyone's looking at their phones, never talking to each other.
Yeah. So I'll give you this to that, right?
Yeah.
There were times where, people made trips to, court.
Okay.
And so we had to be transported.
Yeah.
And particularly, like, in the city, I noticed that people were walking in their phones and doing everything in their phones. Mm-hmm. And people looked like zombies to me. I'm like, crazy out here. Like, what's the word? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Coming home to it after visually seeing it but not really understanding it, I can see how that is the culture. That is the predominant culture out here.
Do you have a bucket list of things that you want to do now since you've been locked up for over 20 years? Do you have a bucket list of things you want to, achieve or do?
Oh man, I already jumped out of a plane. Like, what's going top that? Yeah, that was that was that that idea came from my partner Diamond. But something that I, you know, I want to do that's really not all that big is you know, go jet skiing.
Oh my gosh!
Oh yeah.
You gotta come to Florida.
Gotta come to Florida, man.
Man, you gotta come to Florida, man. Seriously, we love to hook up with you, man. We gonna link up. Seriously,
I'll actually be somewhere that down Florida more sooner than later.
Okay.
So
yeah,
you know, I'll definitely
man, hit us up, man. Seriously,
we know where the spots is at.
Yeah, but so yeah, that I'm not sure, man. I just want to, you know, live be happy, man.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Work myself back into life. Like, I'm still in the process of trying to learn what I like and what I don't like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's.
You know what I mean? Just on very basic things. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. On other things, I'm way ahead. I'm saying? But the real basic stuff is what's hitting me now. And I'm having to figure out. But it's all good.
Okay.
So
wounded but not broken.
That's right. So in watching your story, you know, context is everything. So I try to like go online and find like newspaper clippings or stories and stuff just to kind of get a gauge for like where people were at that time and like certain comments made. And, you know, I found all kinds of like article titles, you know, speaking to your situation. And one of them that stuck out was like, you know, this was a miscarriage of justice. And I guess I wanted to ask you, if you had to sum up your situation, like how would you do that? Like what would you say if someone was to say, right, you know, well, talk to me about what happened to you. How would you sum that up? What's your thoughts on that? Because, you know, we come up with fancy titles all day, like miscarriage of justice. But, you know, that doesn't even begin to scrape the surface of what you went through. So I guess if you had to sum it up, like what would you have to say to that? Like how would you put that together?
Wow. I got to write something down.
I know that was a loaded one. That just, you had the pen and paper ready too.
It's thesis. You got to write that. You got to put a thesis on that.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, because I told you, I watched it, and I was just like, man, like, this is crazy what's going on to this guy.
Oh, he's really writing something down.
And, you know, you just look at certain headlines and certain covers, and it's like, and that's the one.
Now you just made me the heat. You just provoked the title to my book.
Oh okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh wow.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not gonna share it. I'm not gonna share that just yet.
So you got a book coming out, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I appreciate that.
Anytime.
I appreciate you provoking that thought. But you know, how would I? Yeah, it's definitely a miscarriage of justice, but it's so much more than that.
Exactly.
It's so much more than that because the system worked as it was intended to work in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't just no miscarriage of justice. The miscarriage of justice is when the system, like, mistakenly does something that injures the person as a result of it. Like that's a miscarriage of justice.
Yeah.
But you know, when you knowingly put somebody in prison for a crime that they didn't commit, that's not an miscarriage of justice.
Yeah.
Mm. You know what I mean? So, I'm not exactly sure how I would define
it. I know it's a loaded question. I know it's a bit of a loaded question. It just, you know, it's I just, for whatever reason, that title just stuck out, and it's like this doesn't even begin to scrape the surface of what you've been through, you know. But I was just curious.
Were you shocked by the support or the attention that the documentary got, that you got from the Black community as well as the white community?
Was I shocked? Yes, I would say that I was shocked I'm shocked that I would be getting communication from people in different countries.
Wow.
Okay. People have reached out to me from England, from Asia, from Africa, from Turkey, like just people from all over the world. Australia, mm-hmm. just everywhere. You know what I mean? And so I'm shocked by that. Yes.
So what are the type of things that you're getting back from those people? What are they saying to you that you know, what are some of the things you can come off the top of your head that you're hearing from them?
Yeah, it's really heartfelt, but it's, you know, thanking me for fighting. You know, some of the people can relate. You know, some people have related or connected to, you know, that wounded but not broken spirit.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, well, Sean, if you can go through that and come out of that the way that you're choosing to come out of that, then you know, I shouldn't be allowing the things that are going on in my life to be affecting me in a way that I am. So it's people saying that I've inspired them to approach things differently. And for me, that's just really humbling.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Well, I tell you, in my family, prison is nothing new to people in my family, but not for someone who is innocent. And you're a beacon, you know, of perseverance, as you well know. But who is Sean Ellis today? Who are you right now versus Sean Ellis in 93?
So Sean Ellis in 93, I've just gone through a hellish ordeal that no man or woman should have to go through.
And don't forget your survivor and inspiration.
Deal with and heal from that.
Mm. I was going to say, do you think, you're going to say something?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, and like my brother just said, like a survivor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, do you think, I know that people don't know what their purpose is in life, and I was saying, do you believe this wrong has somehow guided you to what your purpose is in life and giving you this drive to change things, whether it be through legislation and other things you're doing as far as the charities that you're involved with as well? So what do you believe that this has made, this is exactly who you were meant to be, even though it was going through something that, like you said, no man or woman should ever have to go through? So do you believe your wrong made you find your purpose and hone in on who you're supposed to be?
I can't say that it did. Like, you know, somebody asked me that question the other day.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm still learning my purpose. Mm,
okay.
Like when I came home.
Yeah.
Well, when I was younger first, when I was in middle school, you know, my dad asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I told him that I wanted to be a lawyer. Mm. And then, you know, it's we have trial four happen. And then when I came home, desirous of being a lawyer. You know, I thought my purpose was being a lawyer and defending people in court. Mm-hmm. But then I got introduced to different stuff, and you know, that has an attraction to me.
Gotcha.
You know, community organizing has an attraction to me. It's like, all right, man, like, is that my purpose? So like, I'm really still in the process of really learning myself. But what I do know is that the criminal law system,
yeah,
is broken.
Oh yeah.
I just can't just be quiet and not highlight the fact that it's broken.
Right.
Not utilize what happened to me to lift up the voices of those who are struggling through it.
So based on what you just said, I was with some friends of mine back home, and I was out talking to people about we're going to be interviewing you. And one friend happened to be a friend of a friend was a lawyer. And this lawyer had told me what you just said. The system is broken. So I asked, what would you do to fix it? And then she told me what she would do to fix it. Mm-hmm. And then I said, hey, would you come on the show to talk about it? And she will not. She would not come on the show to talk about it because they are afraid of the repercussions of to tell the truth about what it takes to fix the system as far as criminal justice and everything. And it's crazy to me how they know what to do to fix it, but they won't even talk about it. It just won't due to fear.
So this is what I'll say to that, is that there is a whole community of exonerees that will pick up and step forward on the fight to fix the system. Whoever it was that you were speaking to don't have to step up. Mm. All we got to do is make that connection, because there's a whole exoneree community that's fighting and organizing to really confront and deal with and get redress from the criminal legal system.
Right.
So let's go on and make that connection.
Before we let you go, I want to discuss the foundations that you cover, because we're going to make a donation to it, Brorance will. The foundations, the charities that you are very active in, that you want other subscribers and listeners to chip in if they can, to donate to the cause. And tell us about them.
Yeah, so I am definitely on the board of the New England Innocent Project. I'm definitely involved in that community, in the community of the exonerees. And that's a nonprofit, 501c3. And what that organization does is works to undo wrongful convictions. They work to get innocent people, men and women, from out of prison for crimes that they didn't commit. That's definitely an organization that's near and dear to my heart. And then we have Community Servings, which is also near and dear to my heart, which is actually where I work at, which provides made from scratch, medically tailored meals to those who are sick and infirmed in the New England area.
Very good. I mean, we're definitely going to do our part and donate in honor of it, as your assistant said, Cynthia, which is great. Hey, you've got a great assistant. Love her to death. Wonderful. So, man, I want to thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. Is there anything you guys want to say in telling them goodbye?
I got one thing. Would you do us a huge favor when you come, when you get your book out, come back on our show?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes. Can we do two favors? Whenever you make it down to the Sunshine State, you got to hit us up so we can go jet skiing, right?
That was already a given.
That was a given. That was already given. Bad. I didn't know. I solidified that. My bad. I misspoke. Circling back, thank you so much for your time today. I think I like the word you used, beacon. That's how I view you. That's the light that I hold you in. Like, just again, your poise, what you've went through to come out on the other side of it and still just maintain and look to give back and just keep a positive energy about you, because we had a side conversation. We was like, why isn't Mr. Ellis mad?
Yeah,
I think we'd be mad, and that's so not your energy, man. So just thank you again.
Yeah, and so my demeanor didn't just come overnight.
Okay.
It didn't just come overnight. I was very upset. I don't want you to think that I was in prison, smiling and happy-go-lucky and just jolly Joe. You know what I mean? Like, that isn't what it is. I had some very tough emotional times in there, and some very tough mental times in there. But I was able to work through that as I continue to work through it. But you know, as I've said on other platforms, like what I refuse to do is go through life angry, and having the weight of anger pull me down, and keep me confined to the harm and the trauma that's already been done to me. I'm saying, like, I'm not living that way.
That's beautiful.
Best way to sum it up.
That's why you're the beacon. I mean,
wounded but not broken. You
know, yeah, definitely wounded but not broken. And you know, visit my website, trial4, .com. You can support me by buying some of my merchandise, Wounded but not broken. And I definitely appreciate it.
No, we definitely will. Yeah. No, we definitely will.
And I'll hit you up. I'll hit you up when I get down there, though.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, all right. We're going to hold you to that.
Yeah. Which part of Florida you in? You in North Florida, South Florida?
Central. We're in Central Florida.
Central? Okay.
Yeah. So we in the middle.
Daytona. Okay. Daytona.
Gotcha. We're by the beach, man. So you can't even, you know. My father-in-law got a boat too. You can come and go on the boat.
If I see you on Instagram or somewhere and you post me in Florida, hey,
yo,
I'm gonna come get you.
All right, listen, man. If you see that, hit me up. All right.
Yeah, he's like, be hot. I'm gonna put it back
on you.
Nice, brother. Yeah. Hey, thank you again. We ain't gonna hold you up. I know you have another interview after this, so thank you so much, my man.
Yeah, definitely. I just got hit with some stuff, but nah, definitely. I appreciate you all.
Thank you.
All right, brother. God bless.
All right.
Bless y'all.
Thank you, brother.
Peace.
Peace.